Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Skillshare. Gain 2 months of free access to over 25,000 classes. All you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC. That's skillshare.com/AC. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. So inevitably, we are going to hit hard times as creators, as creative professionals, as people who want to make great work, who want to put it into the world in a way that's going to have impact. But we go through difficult times. It could be times that are imposed upon us. It could be times maybe that we create for ourselves unwittingly, but we go through dips in motivation and just in circumstances. How do we keep going in the midst of those trials and those tribulations? Well, today's guest has just written a book to help us do just that. His name is Austin Kleon. I think this is his third time on the show. We love having Austin on the show. And he has a new book called Keep Going, which is all about how to persist in the face of adversity as a creator. It's a phenomenal conversation. Frankly, I think maybe the interview itself is about 30 minutes, but Austin and I think, talked for about 75 or 80 minutes, just, you know, sort of shooting the breeze. Such a phenomenal guy, and it's a great, great book. I can't wait to share this interview with you. It's coming up in just a moment. Before we dive in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Skillshare. So Skillshare is an online learning community for creators. They have more than 25,000 classes in design, business, and more, and you'll discover countless ways to fuel your curiosity, your creativity, and your career. For example, you can take classes in social media marketing, mobile photography, creative writing, illustration. You know, if you want to learn a skill, Skillshare is the place to go. So whether you're looking to discover a new passion, which many of us want to do, right? Like, what do I want to do now? What skill do I want to develop now? Maybe you want to start a side hustle, but you just don't know where to go or what to do. Maybe you're really great at what you do, but you don't understand maybe the financial part of starting a business. Well, there are courses on Skillshare to help you get your finances in order. Or maybe you just don't understand how to market your idea or your product. Well, Skillshare has courses in social media marketing and just regular run-of-the-mill, down-the-middle marketing. So Skillshare is a great place to gain new professional skills. And it's there to keep you learning and thriving. One of the things I love about Skillshare is that there is a never-ending source of inspiration and fuel for your curiosity. And the great thing I love about Skillshare is that it's, you know, you can go in and it's not like a lot of situations where you pay per course, right? Or you have to buy a course and if you don't like the course, well, you're out of luck. No, if you go in and you want to learn something in Skillshare, there might be four or five options to try to learn that skill. That's great. And if you like one course, fantastic. If you don't, move on to the next. And it's all the same because it's all right there for you 24/7. You can learn on your schedule in your own timing. So right now, Skillshare is offering 2 months of free access to over 25,000 classes. All you have to do is go to skillshare.com/AC. Join the millions of students already learning on Skillshare. Get 2 months of free access to over 25,000 classes. Go to skillshare.com/AC to start your 2 months now. That's skillshare.com/AC. And we thank Skillshare for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, our guest today is Austin Kleon. He is the author of Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad. He's also the author of Steal Like an Artist and Show Your Work. It's the holy trinity, if you will, of like amazing book for productive artists. Austin, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Hey, Todd. Thanks for having me.
So your book is called Keep Going, which implies that some people might be considering not keeping going. They might be considering stalling out. Why this book and why now? Why is this something you chose to write about right now?
I mean, there's really no way around it. I mean, November 2016, since then I have watched people in my profession and my close friends and creative people I know just sort of lose it. I mean, I think everyone got kind of shook in this fundamental way. And I also think that I think there's like a confluence of things right now is we're at this like incredibly stressful political point in our country. And then I think the economy is such right now that everyone is just like facing a lot of burnout with their career. You know, I think social media has kind of come in and gone as far as, social media was kind of our great hope for a while. But now it's kind of this thing that's sort of destroying us,
right?
You know, and I guess that could be the link between the career and the kind of state of the nation or whatever. So for me, it was just, I felt very much like I needed to write something that was about how do you just keep things going when, you know, the world is crazy. But then when you choose a creative career, it just is never as clear and as straightforward as maybe some other careers. So I wanted to write a book that tried to address those two great problems of kind of the state of the world and what creative people go through in their careers, if that makes sense.
It does. You know, it feels like so many of our fundamental narratives are being challenged right now. You know, so many of the things that we just kind of take for granted have been disrupted. And I think when you talk about the election of 2016, regardless of people's political persuasion, regardless of who they voted for, regardless of anything, it's pretty hard to debate that what's going on in the United States. I know we have a lot of listeners around the world, right? But like what's going on in the United States right now is sucking up all of the oxygen in the room, like the political conversation and the debates and the us versus them. I mean, regardless of how you define us and them, like that is sucking up so much of the oxygen in the room. And like you, I see a lot of my artist friends and I'm like, listen, are you doing your work? Like, are you, because right. Like you seem to be spending a lot of time on Twitter, like ranting about stuff, but like, are you, you know, and throughout history, I mean, people have lived in tumultuous times and some of the greatest artists of all time have worked in really tumultuous times. They've written and they've spoken to the culture and they've done these things. And so I was so encouraged. I mean, when I saw this pop up, I get your newsletter every week and then I read your blog consistently. And when I saw this pop up, I'm like, oh my gosh, Austin, that is so perfect, right? I mean, it's just like, first of all, it's what you have been talking about for a long time, but I just, you know, I think artists take what's in their environment and they weave it together and they create a narrative that helps other people find sanity in the midst of uncertainty. And I feel like that's kind of what you're doing with this book, is you're giving all of us just a little bit of sanity, a different narrative that we can adopt in the midst of all of these narratives that seem to be devolving right now.
I hope so. I mean, this is, you're right. This is an incredibly personal book for me. And why it's so personal is that it's the first book I've ever read that I felt like I needed to read. Mm-hmm. Like the Steal Like an Artist was a book that I felt like I should have read when I was like 18. And then Show Your Work was a book that I wrote for people who kept asking me, like, how do you get your stuff out there? How do you promote yourself? You know, how do I get famous? Questions, you know? And this is really the first book that was like, I need this book. Like, I want to read this book, and so I have to write it. And I think from now on, having gone through that, that's what I want to do from now on. I mean, I really want to look at, I think because my writing life is so wrapped up in my reading life, I really want that from now on to be the thing that kind of incites a book. Like, you want to read something and it's not there, so you have to write it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I feel like that's the only way I want to do it anymore. Because it felt so, you know, this was really a book that felt like it had a clarity of purpose the whole time I was writing it. And I just felt it was such a good feeling that that's how I want to work from now on.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So I want to talk about some of the chapters of the book because, you know, again, you've been sort of hitting this nail over and over for a while, but people who are familiar with your work have been hearing you talk about some of these things, but you've really pulled them together in a way that I think is uniquely compelling in this book for this time and for this purpose. So the first thing I just want to talk about, every day is Groundhog Day. what does that mean? What are you talking about when you say every day is Groundhog Day?
Well, this really started with a lot of my work starts with like a talk. I'll go give a talk somewhere and that will kind of morph into material with the book. This was a talk I gave a really years and years ago, actually, at this point. But I had a picture of Don Draper from Mad Men. Mm-hmm. Right at the end of Mad Men, you know, spoiler alert, but he, you know, Don's like, he's on like a hill or something. He's meditating, like he has his eyes closed, and all of a sudden his mouth curls up into a smile, and it's like that great idea has hit him, you know. And I felt like it was such a cartoon moment of what everybody thinks that creativity is like, you know. Yes, like, yes. It's just so linear, and that, like, you're just like, oh, here's the great idea. And I just got to thinking, like, well, what's the opposite of that? Like, how do I feel when I work? And I just immediately jumped on Phil Connors, who is the Bill Murray's protagonist in the movie Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
And for your listeners that don't know the movie, Groundhog Day is a movie about a weatherman played by Bill Murray, who just wakes up on the same day every day. February 2nd, Groundhog Day. And the movie is, to me, it's really the great parable of our time. I really think that movie has more to teach than, you know, any 3-hour epic drama. I mean, that's a 90-minute comedy that I just think contains great truths. And really what the point of the chapter Every Day is Groundhog Day is that, you know, you think your creative career is going to be linear. You know, you think you're just going to kind of take off and you're going to keep getting better and better. And then maybe at some point someone will hand you an Oscar and like you'll have arrived, you know, or something like that. And really, the longer I work, the more I realize it's really more like a spiral, or it's like a loop, mm-hmm. in which you kind of get the idea and then you go through the hell of making the thing and then you come out the other end with something that is both, you know, not what you were thinking, and also, you always, at the end of a project, it's not as bad as you thought it was going to be, and a lot of times it's not as good as you thought it was going to be, you know, it's just something different.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that process, you just have to go again. Like, you just have to, like, do it all over again. So, you know, you write a book, it comes out, people either read it or they don't, and then it's like, now what? Well, then you have to do another book, yeah. you know, if you're going to have a career. And so I really wanted something that was going to kind of nail home this point that, like, if you choose this kind of life for yourself, if you choose a life of creative work, you have to get used to the dailiness of it. And you have mm-hmm. to get used to that sense that every time you're kind of starting over again. And the more you can kind of abandon that notion of linear progress, which I think is beaten into us, as particularly as Americans, you know, there's this idea that you always have to be getting better, you know, oh, well, you got to get more and you got to get better. And like, you know, oh, you got done with college. Well, now you have to get a master's degree and then you'll have to get a PhD and then you'll have to get tenure, you know, that just that yeah. accumulation, that straight arrow of progress. And I think the quicker that creative people can abandon that notion of forward progress, just the healthier and saner they're going to be. It really is like a loop.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing you hinted at in there is that, you know, I think that we're often under the delusion that every artist who we respect, like when they put something out in the world, that they actually believe that it's good. You know, yeah. Which is, I think it's a myth. I think most yeah. people who are, I mean, Bruce Springsteen, my son's a musician and mm-hmm. he's recording and playing music, and it's been really fun to kind of help him through what that looks like. He's got great musical intuition. It's just really exciting to like kind of watch him do his thing. But you know, he'll get to a point in the project where he doesn't want to finish it because he's like, I don't know if it's any good. And I'm like, son, most of the music that you really love and respect, like when that was finished, like the band or the artist was like, I don't know if this is any good, right? Bruce Springsteen didn't want to release Born to Run. Like, he didn't think it was good yeah. enough. You know, it's like,
yeah.
I mean, some of the most transformative music of our lifetime was music that people, when they release it, they're like, nah, but you can be proud of something and still not know if it's good, right?
Of course.
So I think our job is just to produce and to be proud of how we put ourselves into it. And then, you know, leave the determination about whether it's good or not to other people. Like you said, like sometimes people read books, sometimes they don't. Who knows why some books hit and some books don't, or some songs or some artwork, like who knows, right?
Well, and I think that music is such an instructive art form for this particular topic because, yeah, you've got Springsteen working on Born to Run, and then there's the classic, and I don't know if it was drug-induced or not, but there's the classic story of Paul McCartney thinking that Revolver was out of tune. You know, he was just convinced that it was out of tune, you know, and someone had to say, no, Paul, like, it's fine. But I also think that's... Music is a field where, you know, and writing is too, you know, hopefully you have great editors, people mm-hmm. who can tell you whether it's good. You know, I mean, yeah. You need people in your life that sort of, I think people think, for example, that if you get really successful, well, then that's great because you just like keep, you know, once you're successful, you can do whatever you want. And I think that it's really dangerous for an artist to become successful because there's always the possibility that people will stop being honest with you and will stop telling you what they think. So a great example of that is George Lucas. You know, Lucas gets divorced right in between, I think, making like Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And I don't know that a lot of people know how involved his wife Marcia Lucas was in those movies. I mean, she actually won an Oscar for editing Star Wars.
Yes.
And Mark Hamill's on record talking about how formative she was for those movies and how much she kind of pushed him and kind of kept him in check. And Hamill, it's really funny, he is on record saying, like, the reason the other movies are not very good is, like, no one says no to George anymore. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah.
So there's, I think, like, a big part of being a creative person is, yeah, you know, you got to listen to your own guts and you got to always explore what genuinely interests you. But as far as what you release... it really helps to have editors, really good people. And not even, you know, I called it the other day, I think people need eye rollers. People need, you know, like Kanye needs eye rollers in his life. He obviously does not have enough eye rollers in his life. Like he does not, I don't know what Kim is doing for him, but like he needs someone to just be like, dude, this is not it. Like, you are super talented and you're a genius, but like, this is not it, you know? And I think that that's what happens when you kind of buy into the idea that you're a genius, you know? I think that's why Brian Eno's idea of genius is so something I love so much. I mean, Brian Eno famously said that, like, there's a collective form of genius when there's a whole group of people who are kind of supporting people and stealing from each other and sharing. And I think a lot about that right now in my life. Like, who do I have in my life whose opinion I really trust? And I think for young people starting out, you know, a really great, if you have a little bit of an audience at all, like, it's really interesting for me whenever I post things to Instagram. I really like Instagram because, like, it's so immediate and it's so, for what the kinds of things that I do, it's so visual and so quick. But I'm always, the stuff that I love that I feel really close to is never, ever, ever what other people like. It's very rare, you know? And then stuff that I think is tossed off and kind of stupid is stuff that gets like 5,000 likes. And I don't think it's really a commentary on people's taste. I think it's just that a lot of times we don't know what our actual gifts are. You know, like, I don't think we know we need like trusted people in our lives to tell us like, this is where you really shine, you know? And of course, again, you always have to follow your interests. You always have to follow your internal barometer, but you also need those eye rollers and you need those people who can really help you along and say what's good, you know? For me, it's my wife. I mean, my wife Megan reads everything first, and she is my great barometer of whether something's good or not. And you know, there's a reason she's always first in the acknowledgments, is that I think, you know, I don't want to insult my editor, but you know, she deserves an editing credit on the books. Mm-hmm. And we can never get divorced because that's on record and she'll take it.
or you'll have Ewoks in your next book, which would be terrible. So in that section, you talk about the importance of finishing each day and being done with it. And that really resonated with me as well, because I am someone who struggles with carrying the residue of yesterday into tomorrow, you know? What would be, for any of us who kind of wrestle with that, what would be your best advice for how to deal with that temptation?
That's a great line from Emerson. You know, Emerson wrote to his niece, I think, like, you know, that was his advice, like, mm-hmm. finish each day and be done with it. I think that, first of all, I think the nighttime, I'm a morning person, so nighttime is a very anxious, laying in bed at night can be a very fraught thing for me. Mm-hmm. There's actually also people with dementia, they tend to get more confused right around sundown. There's a thing called sundowning. And I find that's true in my life too. I get the lowest right when the sun starts to go down. And so I have a rule in my life. I don't think about my life after dinner. and so I try really hard to fill my evenings with, things that only kind of fill me up. So evenings are for like whiskey and television and books, basically. So I just try not to think too much about my life. I heard from a veteran actually, or I heard from a friend of a veteran who had some really awful injuries in combat, and he said, you know, you always want the sun to shine on your problems. You don't pull your problems out unless the sun is shining. And I really took that to heart. So I don't, as far as like actually integrating it in your day, I'm a big list maker, and I love getting things down on the page. And I feel like if at the end of the day you can sort of like empty yourself for like 5 or 10 minutes of what you got done and what you didn't get done, then you can kind of like say, okay, here's what I'm going to attack tomorrow. Yeah. And like then just kind of have that clarity in the morning. But I just think like for me, it's so important to try to, you know, steal your terminology, you know, die empty at the end of the day, you know, to give it all, but then to also understand like I got one tomorrow, hopefully.
It's funny, I've had a similar ritual for a while. Like the evenings for me are like for bourbon and reading like Martin Buber or Kierkegaard or somebody that reminds me like, first of all, I'm not that smart. You know, when I read some of these other people, I'm like, okay, yes, okay. There are people who have this way more figured out than I do. But then also I have a ritual of looking back on the day and writing about what was my high, what was my low, and what did I learn today?
That's cool.
Just as a way of, like you said, putting a capstone on the day and trying as much as I can to say, all right, this day is over. And it's time to move on. I do wrestle though. I wrestle with not carrying things from day to day and not worrying about how I performed yesterday, you know, when I'm engaging in today's work and all of that. But, I think even just having that mindset, as you said, of just, you know, trying to really put a capstone on the day and say, all right, I'm not going to think about my life after sundown. And then tomorrow I'm going to start. I think that is so valuable, even just as a reminder. I think I might even put a note on my office door, you know, just like as I'm walking out, like, you know, none of this, you will think of none of this in 10 minutes, you know, kind of thing.
Or try to will the amnesia.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. Even with this, like, Men in Black things, like, you know, this erases exactly. my memory.
Well, that's what the bourbon's for.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
No, I think that, you know, since we're already picking on Star Wars, which I didn't mean to do, because I love, you know, I love those movies as much as anyone. I'm, you know, I'm an American male. The one line in Star Wars I have always hated is Yoda's "Do or do not. There is no try." I can't stand that line. All we can do is try. You know, and I think that my wife has a poster above her desk that an artist named Steve Lambert sent to me, and it says on there, "Utopia is not a destination; it's a direction." Hmm. And I try to keep that in mind all the time. Is like, we will never arrive at any perfect place in which we've got this stuff whipped. You know, the only thing we can do is head in that direction. You know, and so I just think that's so important, because we're just in this culture of, like, you know, and especially with self-help, it's like you have this idea that you're just going to be fixed one day, or like, right. you're, you know, we're going to get the right life hack and we're just going to nail it. We're going to fix the bug, you know, and we're not computers, you know, we're not operating machines. You can't just fix a bug and it's fixed, you know, just patch it. It just doesn't work that way. All you can do is kind of like head towards that right direction.
And that completely brings us full circle back to the title, which is keep going, right? Keep going. Yeah. I mean, all we can do is navigate toward. I mean, there is no destination. I think that one of the great, you know, I spent some time in the music business, and one of the great insights I had from being around like really, really well-known musicians and bands, like on occasion when we would do shows with some of these artists, is like you could always tell the ones who thought that they had arrived at some place and then it wasn't at all what they thought they wanted it to be when they started out. So they had this idea of what like being famous and making music was going to be, and then once they got it, they realized, I'm actually still really miserable, you know, like nothing yeah. changed for me. But the ones who were the best to work with were the ones who you could just tell they love the music. I mean, it was just all about yep. the music. And I get paid for this? Are you kidding me? What? You know? Yep. And by the way, that applies to people who were really well known, and also just to people who were like just scraping by on the road. But you could just yeah. tell when it was about the music, there was something fundamentally different about how they treated other people, about how they approached their work, how they interacted with the crowd. You know, you could just tell. It was just a fundamental difference. And so I think one of our challenges in all of this is we have to continue to strive to like fall in love with the work. You know, not the end results always, but like fall in love with the process, and fall in love with getting up and showing up every day.
I think the chapter where I tried to you know, address that in this book is, I think it's chapter 3. It's called, forget the noun, do the verb.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of, I think what you just described with musicians is it's almost like they wanted to be a rock star.
Yes.
You know, like people want to be rock stars for whatever stupid reason, you know, because rock stars seem so happy.
Right.
But you know, and actually, for people listening, I think one of the best things ever done about fame and stardom is the Shep Gordon documentary, mm-hmm. Supermensch, which Shep Gordon was Alice Cooper's manager, and he managed a bunch of other people. And he has that great line in that movie where he says, you know, I've never seen any evidence that fame did anything for anyone, that it was, you know, that it was anything other than something to be overcome. Yeah. And, you know, you get those people that want to be the noun, but they don't want to do the verb. So you know, there's lots of people who want to be a published author, for example. They want to be like someone who has a book on a shelf. And I was one of those people. But eventually you realize, like, that's not what you want. What you want is a life full of writing and reading and thinking. You know what I mean? You start to see yourself not as a noun but as a verb, as something that, you know, I do things. I do these things. That's who I am, other than, you know, I am this thing, you know. And I think that, to me, that takes a while. Like, I think, you know, particularly in the arts, you know, you have to have a certain amount of delusion to get started. You know, I mean, you really have to sort of have big dreams and be a little deluded at first, because it's crazy. It's crazy to think that you will ever make a living doing your art. You know, I mean, it's just a crazy thing. You have to be a little crazy, or crazy to think that you could be good enough that anyone would ever want to listen to you, you know? But eventually you get to that. I think maturity as an artist is you do get to that intrinsic thing where you just love the thing for doing it. And that is the best sweet spot to get at. And I have to say, you know, one of the things that has helped me get back to that spot is my kids. I mean, I have two boys. One of them is 6 and one of them is almost 4. And the kind of, they know what they like, basically. Like, they know what they love to do in this world. And there is such a clarity of what they like and what they want to spend time on that life is very easy for them. And they're incredibly creative kids. I mean, my youngest will draw for an hour straight. He'll have a stack of typing paper and markers, and he will just make 100 pictures. I mean, he's like Andy Warhol. He's just like, you know, he's like just whipping them out, you know. And my other son, Owen, will sit down with GarageBand for an hour, and he'll just make 10 songs. Oh, hey, yes. Papa, I recorded an album, you know.
Yes.
And that clarity of they don't really care that much about the results. I mean, Owen's getting older now, and he does. He wants to listen to his tracks and stuff. But Jules, for example, the youngest, he does not give a crap what you do with his drawings after he's done with them. I mean, you could burn them. You could put them in the recycle bin. He really doesn't care. He is all about making the pictures.
Yes.
And so being in touch with that, watching someone do that, was a real wake-up call for me, because I thought, you know, I've got to figure out what is the thing that I do that I would do no matter what, you know. Yeah. And I think there's different ways that you can wake up to that. But like, what is one of them is being in the presence of someone who's figured that out. I think the other thing is like, you know, some sort of near death experience or something where you figure out that you're going to die one day and you haven't yet. So you should probably do something with your time. But like, it was a big wake up call for me, like with my kids, to just realize like, oh man, like that's what it was about. Like, that's why I started doing this, you know, for the love of it, to feel what it was like to pull a pencil across a piece of paper. Like, oh, that was it, you know. And so that's been a big wake-up call for me. And I think that anyone who is – look, when you turn something that you love into a career or a profession, you're always going to – there's always going to be the potential that you could lose that, you know, being in touch with that. And so that's always something you got to keep in the back of your mind. You got to do things that get you back in touch with that raw – kind of passion, or just the thrill of whatever it was, you know, just the way your guitar strings vibrate, you know, when you hit a chord, you know, I mean, it's just that raw kind of sensual, what it is to do something creative. And I just think that it's so easy to lose. It really is. You know, and I think a lot of the trappings of the noun, you know, there's a lot of stuff that comes with job titles that will pull you away from that.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, you know, we lose touch with our first love, which is really sad. You know, it becomes more about making a living. And we've been talking with Austin Kleon. He's the author of a gem of a book. It's called Keep Going, 10 Ways to Stay Creative in Good Times and Bad. Austin, thanks so much for spending time with us today. What's the best place for people to find you if they want to come looking for you?
The easiest thing is to just pop over to austinkleon.com. It's just my name.com. And the best way to get in touch and stay in touch is I do a weekly newsletter.
Which is great, by the way. I've been a subscriber for months and absolutely love it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's my favorite thing I do online. And it's a nice weekly missive from me. And I just share 10 things I think are worth sharing. And it's my favorite thing I do. And so that's the best way to get in touch.
That's great. Well, Austin, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you. This was fun.
Oh, man. I love talking to Austin Kleon. What a great conversation. What a great guy and a great book. Check it out. It's called Keep Going. Also, if you want to join the conversation, visit collective.accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.